Chapter 4 Sai Blossoms. This Sai has come in order to achieve the supreme task of uniting the entire mankind as one family through the bond of brotherhood, of affirming and illumining the inner reality of each being in order to reveal the divine, which is the basis on which the entire cosmos rests, and of instructing all to recognize the common divine heritage that binds man to man, so that man can rid himself of the animal and rise into the divine, which is his goal. Bhagwan Satya Sai Baba. Seshamaraju married the sister of Pasumarthi Venkataraju of Kamalapuram in the Kadapa district. He was keen that his younger brother Satyam should be given high school education. So he brought the youngster to Kamalapuram and put him in the local high school. But it so happened that Seshamaraju had to himself leave the place and go elsewhere to undergo teacher's training. Pushpagiri Festival. Sometime after Satyam got admitted in the high school, the annual festival at Pushpagiri, a temple town nearby, was to be held. The physical education instructor of the school organized a scout troop for doing service during the festival. Satyam enrolled himself in the troop as he felt that it would enable him to do social work and service. As he did not have enough money to spend, he did not join the school group going to Pushpagiri, but went there separately by himself, walking all the way. He could not afford to buy food, so he just fasted all the days he was there. He never mentioned this either to his teacher or to his companions. He cheerfully participated in all the social service activities of his troop. If anyone asked him whether he had his meals, he would hold out his hand for them to smell. His hand would smell of sweets made of pure ghee. His friends believed that he must have taken some tasty food at some of his relatives' house. The scoutmaster would allocate duties evenly to all the boys in his charge, including Satyam, though Satyam was not as sturdy as the others. Restoring missing children to their parents, providing drinking water to the pilgrims, looking after their medical requirements, and rendering first aid. These were some of the activities Satyam was engaged in. By education and assiduousness, Satyam set a fine example as a social worker. The scout troop, of which Satyam was a star in the Pushpagiri festivities, was undoubtedly the precursor of the present-day Sri Satya Sai Seva Dal, which is rendering yeoman services to mankind throughout the world. On successfully completing his teacher's training course, Seshamaraju was appointed as Telugu teacher in Uruvakonda. As a teacher, he was describing to the children in his class the childish pranks of Balakrishna and Sri Rama. But he could not understand the meaning of the leelas being displayed in his own home by the God incarnate. Both he and his father mistakenly attributed them to goblins and evil spirits. Seshamaraju firmly believed that if his little brother were entrusted to his care, he would soon set him right by liberal use of the rod. With a heavy heart, poor Ishwarama agreed to send her darling son to Uruvakonda. I am the servitor of all. Satyam was admitted in grade 8 in the high school in Uruvakonda. He lived with his brother Seshamaraju. There was no drinking water in the house. It had to be fetched from a well a mile away from the town. To meet their daily needs, Satyam would bring water every day, morning and evening, making two or three trips each time. He would carry two large containers on each trip, slung on each end of a bamboo pole, balanced on his shoulders. The neighbor soon discovered Satyam's affable and obliging nature. They would soon ask him, endearingly, to fetch some water for them too, and the lad would cheerfully meet their requirements as well. Satyam returned to Puttaparthi for the holidays. Ishwaramma prepared to give her little boy an oil bath. When she set about applying oil to his body, she found calluses on his shoulders. The skin too had darkened. He tried to evade her anxious inquiries, but when pressed, explained with a disarming smile, "It is probably due to my bringing water for our elder brother's household." Eyes brimming, the loving mother inquired why he should have to fetch water. Satyam replied, "How can they live on brackish water?" "That apart, dear mother, is it not a fact that I have come only to serve people?" The answer brought no solace to the distressed mother. Anne Marie Marwaha, a lady employed with the German embassy in New Delhi, had enjoyed the good fortune of tasting the sweetness of Bhagwan's love. On one of her visits to Puttaparthi, she asked, "Swami, what is the true nature of your incarnation? I fail to understand it." Bhagwan softly replied, "What shall I say? To tell you in a nutshell, I am the servitor of all." The reply took her by storm. In a torment of pity, she sobbed uncontrollably. She cried, "Why do you say like this, Baba?" Swami explained, "Dear child, that is but the simple truth. Everyone gives me a job to do. Whoever does everyone's errand is indeed the servitor of all, is it not?" Bhagwan's words and deeds, be they of his childhood days or of the present day, are the same. Swami fetched drinking water as a child. Even today, grown up as he is, he is still fetching fresh, wholesome drinking water. The only difference is that a new name has now been given to his labors: Sri Satya Sai Drinking Water Project. In the olden days, neighbors requested him, "Babu, dear boy, will you bring some drinking water for us too?" Today, people from neighboring districts are praying to him, "Baba, will you give us some drinking water for us too?" Bhagwan answers with boundless love and affection, "Yes, yes, certainly, certainly." Some of them have only heard of Puttaparthi but do not know where it is. They have to enquire and find out how to reach there. In their distress, they make their arduous way to Baba, to their divine mother, for succor. And sure enough, the compassionate mother responds, "My poor children have come to me praying not for sumptuous feast, but for a mere quaff of water." The motherly assurance of Bhagwan comes forth spontaneously, "Surely, surely." It is not one mother speaking, but a thousand mothers. Indeed, it is the love of a million mothers. Swami achieves single-handedly what an entire government or a whole nation could not accomplish. The beneficiaries are his own children. For their welfare, he has spent and is spending hundreds of crores of rupees on a drinking water project. People are grateful. But can this immense debt of love be repaid ever? The Sri Satya Sai Drinking Water Project has so far covered about 750 villages and 11 towns. It is considered to be one of the marvels of the world. Water flows through 2,500 kilometers of pipeline and quenches the thirst of a million people in the Royal Sima region of Andhra Pradesh. The nectar-like love of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba is visible in every meter of the long pipeline. Do deeds match words? During his school days in Urvakonda, Satyam was encouraged and inspired to write a short play dealing with human values. It was significantly titled, "Do Deeds Match Words?" The details of that play, written a long time back, are topical even today. Scene 1 of the play opens with a woman who is reading and interpreting verses in the Sri Mahabhagavat to a group of women. In the course of her discourse, she exhorts her audience not to waste charity on able-bodied beggars and the indolent, but to help only those who are infirm, disabled, old, or handicapped. After the gathering disperses, a blind man approaches her and begs for help. She is annoyed and drives him away. A moment later, a Haridas, wearing prominent caste marks all over his body and singing songs, comes begging for alms. He is playing on a stringed instrument as accompaniment to his singing. The lady gives him some rice as well as cash, bows to his feet, and seeks his blessings. Krishna, her son, is a witness to what has gone by. He is perturbed and asks her, "Dear mother, what did you teach your friends during your religious discourse, and what have you done now?" She gets wild and shouts at him, "Shut up! Does anybody do as he says?" Scene 2 shows the same boy with his father in the latter's office. His father extols the benefits of education and concludes his speech saying that one should obtain good education, overcoming every obstacle. A poor boy standing outside is overhearing the inspiring words through an open window. He comes in and says, "Sir, thanks to monetary assistance from high-minded persons like you, I managed to pay my school fees. But now, I am short of 1 rupee to pay this month's fee. Kindly help me." The gentleman replies that he does not have even a paisa with him and opens his purse to show that it is empty. After the disappointed student leaves, several colleagues descend on him and ask for contribution for a function and refreshments to welcome an officer newly posted to the office. In his opinion, he tells them, such an important occasion deserves to be celebrated on a big scale, and gives 20 rupees as his contribution. His son Krishna, a mute witness to all this, asks his father, "Daddy, you spoke at length and in glowing terms about the value of education and the importance of getting educated at any cost. But when the poor schoolboy begged for just a single rupee for the sake of educating himself, you turned him down. On the other hand, you have readily parted with 20 rupees for the sake of an ostentatious waste. Why?" The man turns him in great annoyance. "Do deeds of people match their words? Shut up and go to school." In scene 3, Krishna is seen sitting in his class. His teacher enters in a great flurry. "The inspector of schools is visiting us today," he tells the class. "We have finished 23 lessons so far. But if the inspector asks you, tell him that we have completed 32. I will now do the 33rd lesson. Later, when the inspector comes here, I will teach it afresh in his presence, as if I am doing it for the first time. Whatever questions I put to you now will be repeated in his presence, so that you will impress him with your correct answers." Krishna meets the teacher a little later when he is alone. He asks him, "Sir, the new lesson you taught us today is about King Satya Harishchandra, who was dedicated to truth irrespective of consequences. Even as you taught us about such a noble person, you directed us to speak lies. Is it proper?" The teacher flies into a rage and admonishes him, "Is there anyone whose actions accord with his words?" In the 4th and final scene, Krishna flings his books aside and refuses to go to school. Unable to bring him round, the parents send for his teacher. in the presence of all the three, the boy says, "You are of course teaching me good lessons, but you do not allow me to act on the precepts I hear from you. Of what use are your lessons? I do not want to learn them." The elders are spellbound, but see the point. They relent and express regrets. This is the substance of the short play written by Satyam when he was barely 12 years of age. He also donned Krishna's role when it was played. He conveyed through that role to the world that hypocrisy should be eschewed and everyone should live up to his word. From that day right up to this day, he has been exhorting people. Mere words are not enough. Your actions should conform to what you speak. This ringing message reverberates through the entire world and guides every aspirant towards spiritual elevation. The missing horse. When Satyam was at school in Uruvakonda, a poor Muslim of that town was making a living by plying a horse carriage. One day, his horse went missing. Failing to find it, the poor man came to Satyam for help. The boy directed him to a wood situated about a mile and a half away from the town. He did so and found his horse grazing there. From then on, Muslims of the town developed great love and respect for Satyam. News of Satyam's uncommon abilities spread far and wide. Long before this, Shirdi Sai Baba also displayed a similar miracle when a well-to-do Muslim by name Chandbhai Patil of Dubkheda village in the Aurangabad district lost his mare. Disappointed and tired after a fruitless search for the missing beast, he was dejectedly dragging himself home with saddle on his back. Shirdi Sai Baba saw him, took pity at his despondency, and directed him to search for his mare in the nearby channel. Chand Patil did as told, and to his great surprise and delight, found the animal there. Now, what is the deeper meaning of these two similar incidents? The horse or mare represents the human mind that is ever unsteady. One who succeeds in comprehending the true nature of mind is truly a chittachor. Ashwa is the Sanskrit word for horse, meaning one that is perpetually in motion. We normally take ashwa to mean a horse, but it is only its broad meaning. Horse is always in motion, moving its leg, tail or ear every moment. Thus, ashwa stands for the quality of unsteadiness, the state of being continuously disturbed and restless. The Sanskrit word ashwamedha, horse sacrifice, means offering of one's unsteady mind to God. The Sanskrit word ashwatha, people tree, likewise refers to a tree that is in perpetual motion. Even when there is a little breeze, its leaves keep moving. The human mind also keeps on wavering similarly, both during sleep and wakefulness. Baba says that horse sacrifice, ashwamedha, does not mean that the animal in flesh and blood should be physically killed and offered to God. The true meaning is that our animal nature should be given up as an offering to God. Divine puppeteer acts the danceuse. When Satyam was at school in Uruvakonda, his headmaster arranged a benefit program for raising funds for the school. Rishendramani, a celebrated dancer of those days, was to dance. Publicity material was printed and widely distributed. But due to some unexpected developments, she could not keep her appointment. Lakshmipati, the headmaster, got worried and became tense. Satyam approached him and told him not to worry. The item of dance that Rishendramani was to perform, he said he would himself do. The amazing item that made her justly famous was indeed very difficult to perform. She would put a bottle made of glass on her head, position a plate thereon, and place some lighted oil lamps in the plate. She would then dance, and while continuing with it, pick up a handkerchief from the ground with her lips. Satyam offered to do something more astounding. "Sir, she picks up only a handkerchief with her lips," he said. "I will pick up a needle with my eyelids. But please announce that the performing artist is Rishendramani herself." Several years later, Swami described in his own words what happened on that day. "I was made to wear a sari too big for me. The organizers provided a pigtail of the sort worn by women. As you know, while dancing, the dancer flicks it from side to side. So they made it thick and long. Lest it should fall off while I danced, they strongly tied it all over. Strings of bells adorned my ankles. They found a jalopy to carry me from my makeup place to the venue of the dance program. There was a run on tickets as nobody wanted to miss Rishendramani's dance." "When musical instruments began playing, I gently shook my ankle bells to produce captivating sounds. The audience lost themselves in ecstasy. The headmaster placed a bottle on the crown of my head. Another teacher positioned a plate gingerly thereon and lighted the lamps. Why did they do all this in public? Just to satisfy the doubters who might be thinking that I had all these things firmly fixed and securely on my head. It must be shown to their satisfaction that they were all loosely positioned. Music was being played for my dance. I was moving round and round on the stage. Even as I danced, I suddenly bent down and picked up with my eyelids a needle placed on the ground. The audience clapped and clapped in delight and applause. The district collector, an Englishman, came on the stage to award a medal to me. His name was Horsley. He wanted to touch me before giving the medal. I refused. He said, 'I'm just like a brother to you. I want to place this medal around your neck.' I replied, 'I'm just like your sister. Give it into my hand.' From the side of the stage, the headmaster was signaling to me that he was the collector and that I should accept without fuss. But as I was standing there as Rishendramani, I refused to be touched by the man. Meanwhile, there were claps and noises from the audience asking the collector to hand over the medal and return to his seat. He gave it to me and went back disappointed. The president of Kadapa District Board was Srimati Rama Subbamma during those days. She came to the school on the next day. 'It is due to Rishendramani,' she said, 'that the school could raise so much money for constructing its building. We want to honor her and have brought an expensive sari as a gift to her.' She called out for Rishendramani and requested her to come on the stage. Where from could she come? As the audience eagerly awaited the great dancer, I came running. I was wearing shorts. The guard stopped me. Then our headmaster intervened and told him, 'Yesterday's Rishendramani is really this boy. Let him come in.' Everyone was puzzled on seeing me. Srimati Rama Subbamma lifted me up into her arms, kissed me and said, 'My dear child, you are so tender in age, but have brought great honor to us. I am proud that there are talented persons like you in our country.' She was all praise for me. Ever since, she showed great love for Swami. Wherever she went, she would narrate tales of Swami's glory. This is how Swami gave a dance program that day in the high school in Urvakonda. The whole universe is a stage for the Supreme Being. Ever since that day, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai has been assuming countless forms and fascinating the world with his melodious music and divine dance. The sting of a scorpion. On 8th March 1940, a momentous event took place in Urvakonda. Satyam was stung by a big black scorpion. His body lost sensation. He sank into unconsciousness. The news spread like wildfire and agitated many people. In that region, scorpion sting often meant death. Satyam was administered several injections and medicines, but none availed. Slowly, he recovered in a couple of days, got up on his own, and began to move about. But he seemed to have undergone a total transformation, both mentally and physically. It was as though a spiritual spark, dormant in his inner being, suddenly came to life and began to glow. The effulgence of the Supreme Being comes only after the darkest period. The Lord of Shirdi was about to unveil and display in sharp relief the immense body of his own spiritual powers through the medium of this boy. Satyam was often seen lost in his own thoughts. He recited Sanskrit slokas, sang songs, and gave religious discourses. His behavior was strange and inscrutable. Sesha Maharaju and his parents were deeply concerned and confused. Years later, somebody gave a speech in the presence of Baba. He said, "Swami was stung by a scorpion. That is the reason why he acquired spiritual powers from that day." Baba, who spoke after him, stated, "The person who spoke before me said that Swami obtained spiritual powers because of scorpion sting. Let him be stung by 100 scorpions. Let us see whether it would bring any spiritual powers to him." There is no doubt that the incident of scorpion sting is merely a turning point in Swami's life. It cannot be the cause of his divine powers. It merely marks the stage of his sankalpam, will to unveil his divinity. The bestower of knowledge. Going back to the happenings in Urvakonda, one day Satyam appeared deeply lost in himself. Suddenly he said, "Narayana Sastri next door is reciting the stanzas in the Sri Mahabhagavat, but is committing many mistakes in his exposition. Send for him." Some persons went to the learned man and requested him to come and see Satyam. Disdainfully, Sastri said, "Ah, he is but a mere boy. Is he finding fault with my learning? What does he know?" He did not bother to come. But Satyam insisted. This time, the intermediaries could persuade the old man to come into Satyam's presence. The boy explained to him all the errors he had committed. He also put him some questions on the Puranas. The scholarly Sastri admitted his lapses and acknowledged the corrections made by Satyam. Astounded at the young boy's brilliance and erudition, Sastri prostrated himself at his feet. Even now, occasionally, Bhagwan finds scholars whose quest for the supreme reality consists merely of profound study of scriptures, sacred texts, and mantras. They devote a lot of their time to scholarly exposition of their deep learning. But in their single-minded dedication to learning, they fail to recognize that the very supreme being they are aspiring to reach through scholarship, the very object of their studies, is present right in front of them in human form. Scales of intensive learning prevent their eyes from visualizing the ultimate reality in the person near at hand in flesh and blood. Looking far, they miss what is close by. Bhagwan grants such persons proper insight that they are in need of. In this context, it is relevant to recall an interesting incident that reveals Bhagwan's profound knowledge of scriptures. During the Dashara festivities some years back, a yajna was performed. Elaborate arrangements were made and a special dais was erected for the purpose. Eminent scholars of the Vedas and other scriptures were in attendance. Some of them had no faith in Baba's divinity. They had not yet acquired sincere love and devotion for him. Probably because of that casual and irreverent attitude, a lapse occurred. One of the scholars, who was reciting a sacred mantra, committed a mistake in pronunciation. Instead of correcting himself promptly, the scholar went ahead, thinking, perhaps, that this lapse went unnoticed. Bhagwan turned towards him, looked at him seriously for a moment, and sternly said, "Sastri, chant it again properly." The scholar trembled as if he was lashed. Then Swami started reciting that mantra with impeccable intonation. The assembled scholars were astonished and joined Swami in reciting the mantra with proper intonation. Forbearance. As Satyam's fame spread, people from far and near began flocking to Uruvakonda to meet the amazing boy. Tongues wagged. Some said that he was a victim of some evil spell, that he was possessed by a vile spirit, that he was controlled by a demon, and that a tantric or witchcraft might cure him. The distraught Seshamaraju brought in a worshipper of goddess Shakti to help. Satyam chastised him. "You are worshipping me every day. You are seeking my blessings daily. Now, how dare you come to give me treatment? Bow to my feet with reverence and depart like a good boy." The poor man got frightened, saluted Satyam and left. Satyam was brought back from Uruvakonda to Puttaparthi by his parents. He was shown to well-known doctors of Bellari and Dharmavaram. None of them could diagnose his problem. Now and then Satyam would suddenly cry out, "There, devatas, celestial beings are coming. Offer aarti." Such utterances used to puzzle and distress members of his household. They were told of a reputed exorcist near the town of Kadri, who could drive away even the vilest and the most intractable evil spirit. Pedda Venkamaraju decided to take Satyam to him. He, his daughters Seshamaraju and Satyam travelled there in a bullock cart. The exorcist had a dreadful mien and fiery eyes. He subjected the 14-year-old boy to crude procedures and cruel corporal punishment. He gashed the victim's shaven head with a razor at several places. While blood flowed in streams, he poured lemon juice and onion juice in the wounds. He rubbed an ointment in his eyes, which is notorious for causing unbearable smarting. He poured 101 pots of water on the bloodied and burning head. The inhuman torture which Satyam silently bore with fortitude and forbearance shocked his unfortunate and helpless family members. They felt shaken and remorseful. The exorcist grew wilder because he believed that the devilish spirit that possessed Satyam was unyielding. Unable to bear their mental agony at having surrendered their dear child to such inhuman torture, the family begged the tormentor to give the boy some respite. They pleaded that after he recovered somewhat, he would be brought back for further treatment. Satyam was thus rescued from further torture at the hands of the exorcist. Years later, a Haridas was rendering Bhagavan Sri Satyasai's life in his very presence. As he reached this particular episode of Swami's bodily torture at the hands of a heartless brute, Swami intervened. Those details are too painful even to hear. Skip over them, Bangaru. Sometime later, Sri Kasturi asked, "Swami, you found it so painful even to hear of those sufferings. Why did you at all agree to undergo such inhuman treatment at that time?" The reply of Bhagavan Sai is very revealing. He explained, "Whatever be the suffering this body is put to, it will not affect me. I transcend happiness and sorrow of every kind. I wanted to demonstrate these aspects of mine to the world. That is why I endured all those tortures with patience and forbearance. I invited that punishment willingly because my suffering would convince people of my spirituality. They would develop trust and faith in me and set foot in the rewarding realm of devotion to God." There was a lawyer in the town of Penugunda called Krishnamacharyalu. He came down to Puttaparthi to see Satyam and concluded that his condition was much more serious than he had imagined. He advised Satyam's elders to take him to the temple town of Ghatikachalam. He felt the darshan of Lord Narasimha Swami, the man-lion avatar of Lord Sri Mahavishnu, the presiding deity there, would cure Satyam. On hearing the words of the lawyer, Satyam smiled and asked him, "Sir, I am the presiding deity at Ghatikachalam. Are you advising that I should be taken for my own darshan?" "I am Sai Baba." It was now 23rd May 1940. Satyam was sitting in the front portico of his home in Puttaparthi, materializing sugar candy and flowers and distributing them to one and all. The scene was one of merriment and delight. Some went to Petta Venkamaraju and invited him to come and enjoy the wonderful spectacle. The poor father could not tolerate what he thought was his son's cheap trickery and sleight of hand. He picked up a stout stick and marched to Satyam and demanded, "Who are you? Tell me, are you God or evil spirit?" Satyam looked at his father. He was perfectly serene. Calmly but clearly and firmly he said, "I am Sai Baba. I am of Apastampa Sutra and of Bharadwaja Gotra. I have come to rescue all of you, smitten as you are with fear and lack of mental equanimity. Your ancestor, Venka Avadhuta, prayed to me to take birth in your family. In response to his prayers, I have incarnated." Petta Venkamaraju was thunderstruck. He did not notice that the big stick in his hand slipped to the floor. Why did Petta Venkamaraju, his father, become so overcome and speechless in a moment? Why did he undergo such immediate transformation at the mention of the great Avadhuta's name? The house of Kondamaraju, father of Petta Venkamaraju, used to be visited often by a great person called Venka Avadhuta. He wore a perpetual smile on his face. He was a picture of spiritual equanimity and bliss. The clothes he wore would wear out and be reduced to shreds on his body, but he never cared. If he placed his palm on any person's head, that person would taste profound spiritual experience. Nobody knew where he stayed, when he would come, and where he would go. He was a sannyasi in every sense of the term. He was just like a piece of wood floating free in a stream of water. Such realized noble persons who have attained supreme levels of renunciation and non-involvement are known as avadhutas. In the learned opinion of those familiar with sublime realms of knowledge, Venka Avadhuta was the same as Venkusa, who had fostered Shirdi Sai in his childhood. The Avadhuta used to spend time now and then with Kondamaraju discussing spiritual matters. One day, both of them sat conversing in a banana plantation. All of a sudden, Venka Avadhuta fell silent. Kondamaraju inquired why he so abruptly became silent. The reply was, "Kondamaraju, Mother Earth is weeping. Don't you hear her sobs?" Kondamaraju stared in disbelief. Venka Avadhuta went on, "Very soon, the Supreme Being will incarnate himself on earth in human form. You are destined to witness that incarnation." He repeated the words a couple of times. He asked Kondamaraju to place his hand in his own and assert that he earnestly believed the extraordinary prediction. Sometime later, Venka Avadhuta left his physical body. Now, Pedda Venkamaraju heard his son mentioning the glorious name of the great ancestral saint. Like a flash, he remembered the closeness of that divine person with this family, and also his fantastic prediction about the coming incarnation. When details of what happened reached the ears of the aged Kondamaraju, his eyes swam in tears of happiness. But then, there was a small hitch. None of them who were present there and heard Satyam speak knew who Sai Baba was. Who was he? Pedda Venkamaraju heard that a government official had arrived at Penugunda on transfer in his job, and also that he daily worshipped a fakir called Sai Baba. So, one day he took his son to him. That gentleman saw the boy and declared that he was suffering from some brain disorder and needed to be admitted in a hospital for proper treatment. On hearing his advice, Satyam asked him, "Whose brain is ill, yours or mine? You daily worship this very Sai present right before you in flesh and blood, but fail to recognize him as you have no brain." He asked him to hold his hand, and waving his hands, materialized heaps of vibhuti and poured it in his hand. He also threw it all over the terrified man's residence. On a Thursday, one of the persons gathered around Satyam asked for some proof that he was Sai Baba. Satyam asked him whether he did indeed need proof. Then he called for some jasmine flowers. Taking them in his hands, he flung them on the floor. To the astonishment of everyone, the flowers arranged themselves to read Sai Baba in the Telugu script. All doubts melted away. The Great Annunciation. It was now Monday, 20th October 1940. Satyam was then in Uruvakonda, having resumed his interrupted schooling. He was on his way to school. Suddenly he turned back, returned home, flung his books away, and cried out loudly, "I no longer belong to you. Maya, delusion, has left me. My devotees are eagerly calling me." On hearing these loud words, his sister-in-law looked out of her kitchen window. She saw a halo of blinding luminescence around Satyam's head. "I am leaving," he told her. "The work I have come here for has to be initiated." As he said these words, his brother Seshamaraju and the neighbor Narayana Sastri arrived on the scene. On seeing the splendorous halo, Sastri fell at the feet of Satyam. Seshamaraju stood speechless and motionless. Glorious with a crown of effulgent light, Satyam walked to a nearby large garden belonging to Anchaneyalu, an inspector of excise. He sat on a boulder there. Several eager devotees sat around him. Satyam began singing her bhajan song, the first in the vast body of bhajan songs which are now resounding all over the world. Manasa bhajare guru charanam tustara bhava sagara taranam.
Manasa bhajare guru charanam tustara bhava sagara taranam. Bhajare guru charanam tustara sagara taranam.
First learn that you are in Bhavasagara, ocean of worldly life. Next resolve on Taranam, crossing it. Then fix a guru or the name and form of God which appeals to you. Then dwell on his glory. Do bhajan, but do it with all your mind and concentration. Sing in praise of the master's lotus feet with all your heart. It enables you to cross the difficult to cross ocean of birth-death cycle. Devotees forgot themselves as they sang in tune with him. Some lighted joss sticks, others garlanded Satyam. A photographer turned up and prepared to photograph him. A small rock stood in front of Satyam, intruding into the picture, and the cameraman decided to be removed. Satyam said, "Let it be. Go ahead and take your photograph." When the film was eventually developed and printed, that small stone was seen, to the astonishment of everyone, as Shirdi Sai Baba's form. References to Bhagavan Satya Sai Baba in ancient treatises. Dr. E.V.V. Sastri, a member of the Astrological Research Society of India, studied several Nadi treatises written thousands of years ago by various sages and discovered therein many stunning references to Bhagavan Satya Sai Baba, which he published. Some excerpts are given here. Agastya Nadi says, "Satya Sai Baba will heal diseases of people with lightning speed. By his mere will, he will bestow health. Many educational institutions will be established by him. He will publish numerous books on spiritual subjects. He will develop spirituality in humanity. To establish dharma and to resuscitate dharma will constitute the principal features of his mission. In his earlier incarnation, he would be Shirdi Sai Baba. He will be the embodiment of kindness and compassion. He is the father of the universe. He will be an all-merciful avatar of God, preceptor, protector, and father of the world." Buddha Nadi records, "Baba will be eternally immersed in Anandam, bliss." Shukra Nadi says, "His residence will be called Prashanti Nilayam. By emphasizing the principles of Satya, Dharma, Shanti and Prema, he will establish and spread peace all through the world. He always delights in serving humanity. He will be possessing all powers and siddhis. The person of divine aspects would be previously Shirdivasi, resident of Shirdi. He is Sankalpa Siddha. Whatever he wills, happens. He will be in Nirvikalpa Samadhi state. He is God incarnate. He will derive immense joy in the service of mankind." Sri Chinnadurai consulted Brahmanadi and found therein precise references to Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai. In his life, Thursdays will be sacred days. By the way he will live and act, he would create the illusion of being just an ordinary individual residing in Puttaparthi. He will bear the name of Narayana. He will be the incarnation of Shiva Shakti and the reincarnation of Shirdi Sai. Born on the banks of the river Chitravati in tranquil environment, he will be the embodiment of supreme equanimity. In the Nadi preserved carefully in the Subramanya Swami temple in Palani, it is written, in the Andhra region, surrounded by Tamil, Kerala and Karnataka lands, on the banks of the river Chitravati, God will incarnate himself. His name will be Satyanarayana. He is a great yogi, supreme yogi. He never goes to sleep. In Padma Puran, authored by the great Rishi Parasara, it is written, in the village named Parthi will be born a person called Satyam. He will be 5 feet 3 inches high. He will act like a powerful magnet capable of drawing to himself the whole world. Baba himself informed devotees that Padma Puran was translated into English by an Englishman called Wilson. Baba also said that the complete copy of Jaimini Bharatam, which contains clear references to Satya Sai, is in the possession of some spiritually elevated persons. In Vishnu Puran, it was mentioned that he will display great superhuman powers in establishing the new age of truth. His parents will be devotees of Lord Vishnu and will reside in a village worshipping the cowherd form of Sri Krishna. Sri Aurobindo was a great yogi, Mahayogi and a great Rishi. He was immersed in intense spiritual sadhana at his ashram in Pondicherry between 1923 and 1926. He was praying that God should take birth in this world for the spiritual elevation of mankind. On 24th November 1926, he emerged out of his samadhi, spiritual trance, and announced, yesterday, God incarnated himself on the earth. With his boundless divine powers, he will direct humanity's mind towards higher, nobler goals. In every heart, he will light a spiritual lamp. His godly voice will ring in the ears of the whole of humanity. It is clear from the date of incarnation mentioned by Maharishi Aurobindo that he was referring to Sri Satya Sai only. Prophet Muhammad's discourses were published in 25 volumes 7 centuries after his death. The collection of those volumes is named The Ocean of Light. Several symbolic features by which the coming master of the world could be identified have been mentioned in those books, volume 13. They are, he will have very thick hair on his head. His forehead will be broad. He will have a birthmark on his cheek. His face will always look clean-shaven. He will wear only a pair of clothes. His dress will be of flaming red color. The color of his face will look sometimes like copper, sometimes golden, sometimes brownish, and sometimes like the moon. His physical form will be small. His feet will be delicate like a woman's. Right from the moment of his birth, he will carry all knowledge in his head. So also, the entire corpus of the world's religions and precepts will be in him right from his birth. He can grant whatever one prays to God for. All the riches of the world will lie at his feet. He will go amidst his devotees, move among them and touch their heads with his palm. Whosoever sets eyes on him will experience supreme bliss. He will take residence on a hill. He will live for 95 years. He will fill the world with peace and tranquility. This Lord of the world will produce his own forms out of his own body and his mouth. In this manner, as many as 27 references have been made, which clearly and unmistakably apply to Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai. Nostradamus, the French futurist of the 16th century, wrote a book called Centuries, in which he wrote, "The coming ruler of the world will appear in Asia. The triplicity of waters will give birth to him. He will consider Thursdays as sacred. All the countries of the world will wonder at and admire him for his boundless wisdom and powers. From all parts of the world will people come to honor him." The book of Revelations in the Bible describes the advent of the great master. An angel appears before John and reveals, "Behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon it was called Faithful and True. His eyes were as a flame of fire, and on his head are many crowns. He was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. Out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword." The embodiment of compassion and love, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, has been so described in numerous religious treatises. 100 salutations to his lotus feet.